Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. As we come into 2010, we're in the middle of a high tide building. And this high tide has been building since late 1680s. I talked before about light and how this spectrum of light woke our race up first. It woke up the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, and it brought out our Godzilla, our green goddess. Our creativity accelerated. Well, I'm going to describe it again as a high tide. This high tide started in the 1680s, and it was a ripple. And that ripple was felt, and it woke us up, and it woke up our Godzilla, because our Godzilla swims really well. Well, this high tide also started accelerating. It got the ripple turned into a wave in 1950. And now this wave is going to be the high tide of all high tides in 2012. We don't really fully know a lot about what our Godzilla, our green goddess, is capable of, or what she's been working on. She might have had some little babies over there in Iran or somewhere. We have no idea. But what you do need to understand is there are different groups looking to take advantage of this high tide simply because there is no controlling the wave. You can only ride it. We got our Godzilla to ride it on, which is great. But there are groups looking to take advantage of it from a negative aspect as well. And you've already seen this. Michael Moore is releasing a film about capitalism. And what our enemy is doing is saying, of course, there's a problem. There's a problem with capitalism. Well, we're at a time when this high tide is going to wash away everything. There's nothing you can do about that. But what you can do is try to use that energy and try to get something out of it. So he's saying there's a problem with capitalism. And there's he's trying to guide the reaction. Into that reaction, they're going to say, you know, they got a solution. And it's probably going to be some kind of next generation communism, some type of Eurasian humanity, blended humanity, and communist. But what you need to look out for is perception around you, because you're going to see all of humanity is waking up, but we're talking about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. They will be waking up very, very quickly. Based on something called a negative conditioning. And it is something our race is prone to, and only the white rabbits are prone to it. Other races, you can try to force it on them, but we do it naturally to ourselves. And I'm going to spend some time talking about that. But coming into 2012, coming into 2010, I expect to see a huge war with Iran and Israel. It's going to be a lot more than they bargained for, and a lot more than anyone thinks. There is no way to avoid it. There is no way to avoid it, in my opinion, simply because Gollum's destiny in Lord of the Rings was to dance in the fire with that ring. You can't keep him away from the ring, and you can't keep the ring away from the fire. It's his destiny. It's how a dark age ends. And then afterwards, they're going to try to pull something again. Just be aware of that. And it should be pretty interesting. But we're going to spend this particular MP3 is going to be on negative conditioning or repressive conditioning. It isn't an easy, simple topic to talk about in an MP3, in one MP3, but I've reduced it down to give you what you need to know. Many of you have heard the term self-hatred, or maybe you've used it. you know that you say, you know, our white rabbits are full of self-hatred and this and that. And maybe you've blamed others for that. Maybe you blame the Catholic Church or Christianity. Maybe you've blamed the Jews, the Jew rabbits. And we're going to talk about where this comes from. You know, most of you live in a neighborhood, and all your neighbors you yell the word racist, and they hold off, but they actually think they are racist. You know, they think the worst things about themselves. It is no different. When you ask why do these people all think they're so racist and so on and so forth, or why are they so prone to this type of conditioning? Well, you know, why did they think they were sinners? You know, our ancestors thought they were evil sinners for hundreds and hundreds of years. So whites will believe all kinds of stuff about themselves, but they are prone to a certain type of conditioning, and we're going to talk about it, and I'll label it negative conditioning or repressive conditioning. I'll be back in a minute, and we'll start that. Negative conditioning is something elements of our race, in my opinion, have known about for quite some time, and I'm not talking about the Hebrew side either. I'm talking about elements of the European elites, so on and so forth, that would be more racially minded. But negative conditioning or repressive conditioning is something that the indigenous white rabbits of Europe do. We do it to ourselves. We're always in a state of it on some level, in some way, for some unique reason. But it's how we condition the best. And this came into the public view. We're going to talk about how this came into the public view by the writings of a man named Michel Foucault. And that is Foucault. And he was a philosopher, and he had been writing basically in the 70s, I believe the book came out, about Victorian England. England during the Victorian Age. And many of you know that Victorian Age was very prim, very proper, very prudish. But what he wrote was basically, by being so prim and proper, by repressing sexuality, by repressing talking about it, it didn't make it go away. It brought it to the forefront of their minds. And what we know now is that when you think of prim and proper Victorian England, well, at the beginning it was. And then it becomes self-reinforcing and becomes nearly religion, not talking about sex. And then all of a sudden there's all kinds of weird hanky-panky stuff going around at every level of the society. It has all the appearance of looking dysfunctional. And it is upside down. It is backwards conditioning. And because of Foucault, a great many sales techniques were invented in the 70s and the 80s. And many of these you've seen before. The smoking is evil type thing. White rabbits are very, very curious. We'll stick our head in any rabbit hole. If you say the earth is flat and you're going to fall off the ocean, well, you're going to get white rabbits sailing to sea. It's kind of crazy. Well, don't you know you're going to fall off the... Well, I don't care. I'm a white rabbit. I got to do it. We tend to be like that. We're the curious rabbits. But anytime you see any type of repressive conditioning or negative conditioning, you better look out. And one of the famous ones in the 80s, I believe it was, Madonna brought out this sex book, and this sex book with a metal cover, and it had all these naughty marketing type things, and it was very taboo, and it sold like a gazillion of copies. Well, that is negative selling. They're not selling something by making it, drink Coca-Cola, this is good. You make it, you sell it by making it naughty or evil, or making it bad. Many of the young people that are attracted to National Socialism or Nazism are not attracted by Hitler is good. You've been attracted to it naturally under some type of negative repressive conditioning, and I'm going to go into that Nazism, but these negative selling techniques accelerated, and the famous one was maybe you remember some of the horror films growing up, some of the horror films that went from PG to R rating, and there was a lot of argument over why they went from PG to R rating if they were borderline. A lot of the directors and the film studios had done a lot of research, and by going from PG to an R rating, it made a lot more money. Well, those are all various different types of negative selling techniques, and there's a litany of them. And I'm not an expert on sales, But I do have a PhD in white rabbit ecology and psychology. So I know a little bit about this. But we tend to naturally, not unnaturally, but naturally fall into negative or repressive conditioning. And what I'm going to do is talk about the Holy Trinity. That in my business, and the guys that know what they're looking at, the guys and gals, have not been able to believe our eyes with the type of repressive conditioning that came about from one event. This event has never been reconciled, and that's World War II. And we're going to talk about it in regards to race in a unique way. I'm going to talk about it in regards to the Jews, which is kind of obvious. And I'm going to talk about it in regards to World War II in general, or Nazism. And we're going to go over the repressive conditioning, the negative conditioning, and what's going on right in front of your eyes that some bright white nationalists have started to pick up on. The flip is occurring. Now, once you catch it into motion, you can do some interesting things to either push it along, and then once it gets extended to start to flip, there's obviously some bright white rabbits out there, but there is nothing you can do to start it. This one is rather interesting, because this one was started by our enemies. It was started by demoralization. It was started by active measures. You know, they did a 180 after World War II, and they agreed with Hitler. And when you call every little white Christian or white kid a Nazi for defending himself, you agree with Hitler. You tell them on a subconscious level that we will not coexist with you. Well, that's agreeing with Hitler. That's what Hitler said. I don't think they just recently have realized, it's been about 10, 12 years, they've realized what's been done. But you never, ever want to put anything in place that is repressive or negative conditioning if you can help it, especially against yourself, because they will turn it into a religion. White rabbits will go wild with it, and we're going to talk about this in three different instances, and it became a force of nature, but it was put in place accidentally, I'm guessing, by our enemy through active measures, or through demoralization, through brainwashing techniques, post-World War II. And it's become multi-generational. And I'm going to tie it together in the end of some different things, because I've seen some things that have stupefied me. And this has nothing to do with our enemies. Our enemy is in a lot of trouble. According to them, at least. But we'll see, I'll walk you through each one of these. We're going to do the first one in regards to race, and I'm going to talk about the black rabbits. Then we're going to do the Jew rabbits, and then we're going to tie it in with the Nazi rabbits, or World War II in general. And I'm going to discuss the negative or repressive conditioning, and then I'm going to go through the flip, because it's happening right in front of our eyes. And we're going to tie it in, and I'm also going to bring in another old MP3 file and tie it in. I was asked about some different things, and I'll do that. I'll do that a little bit on down the road, 30 or 40 minutes from now. So let's talk about right in front of your face some negative conditioning. And most of you are listening to this not because you were born with good racial instincts, because most white rabbits aren't. But that's not necessarily a bad thing to begin with. It is fundamentally what we are. Most of you are listening to this, something like this, simply because of repressive or negative conditioning. And I'll be back in a minute, and we'll start this little journey. Black rabbits is so wonderful. Black rabbits is geniuses. Black rabbits build pyramids. Black rabbits is our friend. Black rabbits never commit no crime. Black rabbits are so special. They've been with us hundreds and hundreds of years, but they still continue to live with us because we's evil, racist white rabbits. Black rabbits invented everything in the world. Black rabbits is so special. Black rabbits are our friends and never do anything wrong. Black rabbits are so sexy. Black rabbits are never ever violent. Black rabbits don't commit no crime. No, those crime statistics are racist. Racist white rabbits do that. When it comes to the indigenous black rabbits of Africa, and immigration as a whole, or anything racial, everything's been led off these black rabbits. post-World War II, and actually going back a little bit further than that. But it's more than a little negative conditioning. It's repressive conditioning. It's repressive conditioning that started out as demoralization and then took a mind of its own, because Lone Ranger has to have his Tonto. You notice Jimmy Carter running and defending Tonto. Well, Tonto is now president, but he doesn't really have any power, and he has to take take Carter seriously. That's why he got ticked off, and he upstaged Carter, says no, it wasn't racist, but Carter says it was racist. And Jimmy Carter, of course, is Lone Ranger, and Lone Ranger has to protect Tonto. And Tonto, of course, is little Obama, the Talibama. And it is funny stuff. But what you need to understand is this type of repressive conditioning is extremely dangerous, because there has not been one time in the history of our race that it doesn't boomerang when it comes to anything natural, nature-based, whether it be sex or anything else. The last thing in the world you want to do is do any type of repressive conditioning or negative conditioning around our race, because it will boomerang. But when I say boomerang, it'll go a 180. After World War II, they did a 180. And it was starting even before that. But after World War II, they did a 180 on race. They became anti-Hitler and anti-white. That's extremely dangerous. They basically agreed with Hitler. Most of the people listening to this, I don't care if you're just a white Christian who listens to political cesspool, basic conservative. You've been called a Nazi. And when someone calls you a Nazi, when the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, calls you a Nazi, they're agreeing with Hitler. They're saying that we can't coexist peacefully with you. That's what Hitler said. And so this has been comedy to watch, and also extremely destructive, because they could not arrest it once they put the trend in place. But what has happened of late is that this trend, this negative conditioning, this repressive conditioning, across the board, they've started to try to flip elements, and I'm going to go into that in a minute. But it even gets deeper than that, doesn't it? When it comes to immigration, is wonderful. Immigration, our strength. It's all a bunch of negative, repressive conditioning in regards to race. And what we've seen, and I got asked this question by a basic white nationalist, I guess. He said, when I first started going to American Renaissance, I'd read about all this crime and everything else, and it was finally like an outlet. This was when the internet first got going, I guess, and American Renaissance first got a site up. I just realized that I wasn't the only one that was delusional. I was seeing this across the board. White people starting to notice crime more and more. And what he was asking, he asked a specific question. He's like, in the last few years, especially post Hurricane Katrina, because that's a big event, I'm going to get back to that, we've seen them starting to expose more and more African crime down mainstream channels. For instance, if any of you see any big black crime events, you're going to see it on Drudge, and they will show it. They will show everything on Drudge. Drudge is a neocon network. Well, they're flipping. Flipping is what I call when someone realizes that there's a repressive or a negative type of conditioning in place, and they're trying to flip it. And you do it by planting the meme, planting the ideal, and coming back to it. And there are many different ways to go about it in propaganda, but that is on full course, because when it comes to this trend against Africans in greater Western civilization has actually started with a small little quote. It started when Tony Blair, prior to him joining the Catholic Church, it was well prior, he slipped up in some type of news event and said Africans are exceptionally violent, or something along those lines. And I've heard the quote. I heard it. A friend of mine has it recorded. I want to say it was one of the BBC. And it's not uncommon for these guys to say stuff about Africans. It's not uncommon for Putin to say that they're, to say things about them. And it'll come out subtly on different channels, and then it'll go away. I mean, you won't be able to, you would have to really do your homework to find the quote from Tony Blair and to be able to hear it. I would like to play it for you here, but it's owned by, like, the BBC or something, and that's a no-go for me. As far as playing any sound bites directly from them, but he did say it. But I'm sure you've heard many say things off the cuff, but he never had to apologize for it. It went away. But things started then. And then you saw more and more mainstream sites come up with these violent crimes, and they're exposing it more and more. Some are fighting it, some are pulling the Jimmy Carter because they can't control it. Once this goes into motion, they cannot control it. They cannot control, you just can't control. Once the Catholic Church puts in place that you are a sinner, they're going to believe it. We have the tendency to believe fantasies. You know, so when you wonder why your neighbors think they're actually racist on a deep inside basis, why they have this need to think bad things about themselves, why they think they were sinners for hundreds of years. It is our race, and the yin to that, the yin to the yang is the actual creativity. You know, we will stick our nose, we will go to the moon. We'll do that just to see what's up there. We'll do crazy stuff like that, but it is all part and partial. But we do repressive condition very, very well. And this has been a multi-generational type of negative conditioning. But we've seen the flip start. And it started with that quote from Tony Blair in my mind, and maybe you could point to events before that. Now, obviously, it's not fast enough for the white nationalists, but he was scratching his head. He was saying, it seems like to me that everyone's noticing this, and this is all over the channels. You see, the funny thing is, the only rabbits on earth that ever thought nice things about black rabbits are white rabbits. No one else on earth can stand them. But the big one came in Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Katrina was a huge debacle internationally. And there's a lot that the white rabbits listening to this don't know about behind-the-scenes stuff. And I will tell you a story. There's a wealthy family in New Orleans. And that wealthy family got in an Israeli defense contractor to come in and defend their property. And this very, very connected, I'm assuming is Jewish, connected individual was extremely ticked off after Katrina. Because he'd been warning them about this for years, that if anything happens, it's gonna be a catastrophe internationally. And what he was saying, and they were extremely ticked off, because what he was saying is that the government is big and sloppy, but someone intentionally stalled. Someone intentionally stalled. Now, I know many of the Africans are so far gone, they're thinking, the hurricane was racist and Bush has a weather weapon. And if he did, I would have a whole new line of respect for Bush, because that's clever stuff. Weather weapons. Cool. But this happened, this event happened, and any time it happens, you look to take advantage of things. And different segments of elites will do that. But what he was saying was someone stalled. You see, if you start talking about a stall at a high level of 15 minutes or 30 minutes on an email or an hour, well, by the time that gets down to the food chain of the government acting, that could be 12, 15 hours. That's disastrous by the time it gets down there. But what they were saying is someone stalled, someone intentionally held off to expose that, expose the condition of the inner cities. And where did he get this ideal? Well, apparently, and this is kind of made the new, this is kind of right in front of your face, they were having all these high-level meetings. And these high-level meetings are with investors of the United States. You know, anyone that holds a U.S. government bond or a treasury note is an investor in the United States. And you're not investing today. You're investing 15, 10, 10 years to 30 years down the road. You're investing in the future. And many of you have noticed all these meetings with Japanese investors and with the Japanese government and the Chinese government. And of course, most of these meetings are headed by the different Federal Reserve guys who are by and large all Hebrews. Maybe you just woke up and noticed that. But what happened was, shortly thereafter, apparently, they got ambushed. They said, look, we didn't invest, which is true. In 1965, America was as European as China is Chinese. America's like 89% European. China's 91% Chinese. They were saying, we didn't invest in an African country at these low. We didn't buy bonds in an African country. What are you going to do about this? And you have a bunch of those elites, different segments, even the Jimmy Carter, even the liberal segment saying, we shouldn't let this go that far. You know, what are we going to do? And they were put over the barrel. And of course, there's one segment of the Chinese that is their partners. Not all the Chinese. Chinese are 50-50 group. Some of them are the Maoist, more communist branch, and some of them are, they do that German high step still, and stuff like that. But they were pulled over the barrel. Pulled over the barrel. Because you see, when Katrina, what they were saying is when Katrina stalled, when that stall happened, and you know, governments are big and clumsy to begin with. And they were saying that after that ambush, that created a problem. That problem got a reaction, and that allowed those Asians to come in with a solution. And there was a lot of that upper level that were very teed off. And even since then, the neocons have bent on the African deal. And of course, they were the last line of defense because the Soros type would have sold them out long ago. They can't operate with them. They're a liability. And of course, they've done their foremost to promote them. But it's been comedy to watch this. And what they were saying is that everything was a little too cute, a little too perfect. You see, the biggest problem you can have is perception. In a fiat money supply, in a private central bank, you create perception problems with the long-term viability of your debt. Well, you create a whole new level of negotiations. And believe it or not, when it comes to the Chinese, they have no interest. There's a whole segment that have no interest in anything but China. And then you have another segment that is a little more interested. You could say that they do business with the Hebrews, with the Rothschilds and Rockefellers and whatnot. But the big tip-off has come of late. The big tip-off happened on Wednesday, September 9, 2009. And I've seen this coming a long time. And this is actually one you can look up easily. It's done on the Independent on Sunday. And the Independent is Anglo. And so you're dealing with Anglosphere, which may as well be Judeosphere when it comes to the media. And I'm going to read you this headline. And this is, again, the Independent on Wednesday, the 9th of September 2009. For some reason, on the title, it says on Sunday. I don't know why, but it's the Independent, Wednesday, September 9, 2009. A skull that rewrites the history of man. It has long been thought and agreed that Africa was the sole cradle of human evolution. Then these bones were found in Georgia. Oh my. You see, all your life, you've heard that humans come out of Africa. Yes, you have. That's the game they've been running. They wanted a blended humanity that was part African, part Asian, and part European. You've seen that. That's their spiel. That's the, you know, the Rothschilds spiel. Steven Spielberg and some of these guys say they're part African, probably because they're related to the Hyksos or something in Africa, in Egypt, and they were had a segment that were part African that bred in or something, or related to some part African pharaoh of late, or who knows? Who knows what garbage? Use your imagination. But what we've seen is they're starting to flip. The human origins don't come from Africa; they come from Eurasia. What's funny about this is that if you were to start digging right now, right where you're sitting, if you were to start digging a big rabbit hole, I don't care if it's in Oklahoma, you could probably find a skull to upstage that. In fact, if you were in a, it doesn't matter if you were in Germany, you could probably find a skull older. If you wanted to spend enough money digging, wherever you're sitting right now, wherever you're standing, wherever you're listening to this, you can easily, if you spend enough money, find a skull that's older. So this has been some time in the planning, and they love digging in deserts. They love digging in deserts because it's easy to do. It's like digging on a beach. Digging in Africa, they put a lot of money into that, but that has been a total waste for them. And like I said before, the Eurasian thing, those numbers work for them racially. They don't work any other way, but they've waited way too long for this stuff. And many of their elites have been long divided. So watch the flip and watch it come on this one. This is going to be pretty interesting, and they've sold them out. Most people think that that Obama was put in as you know, some epitome of black culture and everything else. Well, you know, Anglosphere typically post Civil War, even in regards to Civil War, we haven't really elect presidents. We elect anti-presidents. Their job has never really been to do anything right, although a couple of them have done little things. post-Civil War, they typically waged war on their subjects. That's what an anti-president does. And if you notice one thing about Obama, his job, you know, he didn't hesitate to kill that African on a boat, to have that SEAL team kill that African. He won't hesitate to say something in Africa. We used to have a saying on the bus in the ghetto, and that says, if you want to get rid of Africans, put in a Dada. You know, Dada will wipe out Africans. If you really want to get rid of Africans, put in a mulatto, because they don't have any patience or time for them at all. So it should be interesting to see where this goes and how this goes. But the main segment, and of course the Pooty Poots and all that side has sold them out a long time ago. But as long as that repressive or negative conditioning is in place, it ain't going to work out how they think. It just doesn't. Only a certain percentage are interested in that. And even that, yeah, it results in some disastrous multiracial relationships or whatever, but they're playing a much different game long term. But the last line of defense sold them out. They can't do anything with them. And they got put over a barrel. They got put over the barrel. And that is one thing that's dangerous for the African rabbits, because you don't want this main section. If you cost this group money, which you have, you cost this group their new world order, which you have because you're so unruly, you don't want to be around, because they're not nice. They're not nice when someone costs them money. And by the way, you might be the only thing they can beat up on, really, because they're losing power across the board. But now we'll go on and talk about the next negative conditioning. And negative conditioning, again, repressive conditioning, has nothing to do with negativity. It could very well be a positive, but it goes against reality. And when you get into why we do this, I don't know. Why did our ancestors think they were sinners for hundreds of years? I mean, maybe you think you're a sinner now. You probably need to sin a little. You're not a sinner. The only one in the world that thinks white rabbits are evil are white rabbits. No one else in the world's afraid of you. If you were to send a little blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid around the world, no one in the world wouldn't welcome them. No one in the world would think anything negative about them at all. The only people that think, again, evil about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are white rabbits. It's just our nature. And I'll be back and we'll talk about the Jew rabbits. Jew rabbits is wonderful. Jew rabbits is God's chosen rabbit. Jew rabbits never steal. Jew rabbits never lie. Jew rabbits never cheat. Jew rabbits are incapable of doing anything wrong. Jew rabbits are incapable of committing any crimes. Jew rabbits are the most wonderful rabbit in the world, because they create everything. They invent everything. But of course, Jew rabbits have no power. No, Jew rabbits are powerless, because Jew rabbits is a minority. Jew rabbits aren't the wealthiest rabbits. That's a stereotype from anti-Semitic rabbits. Anti-Semitic rabbits are always causing anti-Semitism. Jew rabbits can never cause anti-Semitism, because Jew rabbits is perfect rabbits. Jew rabbits is the most wonderful rabbit in the world. That's why every country has to have some. Jew rabbits have their own country, but Jew rabbits don't go to their country, because Jew rabbits are too wonderful. They got to share themselves with all the other rabbits. Jew rabbits are loved by everybody. Yes, Jew rabbits have never once done anything wrong. Jew rabbits have never been kicked out of any countries. And Jew rabbits are not responsible for their own behavior, because Jew rabbits is too perfect. Remember, Jew rabbits is God's chosen rabbit. Now, there's more than just a little bit of negative or repressive conditioning in that. And it is something that goes back a long, long ways. excuse me. What you need to understand is that and I'm not going to spend a long time on this one because it's too obvious, but if you go around the world and you paint yourself as a perfect rabbit, an angel, well, someone's going to automatically think you're a devil, simply because there's no such thing as perfection. There's no such thing as a perfect rabbit. They're just human beings. That's all they are. And the vast majority of them are converts, you know, for the last 1700 to 1800 years, all these countries in Europe, you could be a Protestant or you could be a Catholic, and only a Protestant or a Catholic, but you could always be a Jew. And what would happen is a little kid in the back of the class, you know, every classroom has one of these little rabbits, and this rabbit will be a little upside down. He'll go against the grain. And, you know, that little rabbit is attracted to Judaism. It's like Kafka's family. Kafka, if you don't want to be a Catholic, but you were once a Protestant, and you hate the thought of being a Catholic, you're going to be a good Jew. And that's how they developed this. Now, I'm not talking about the Rothschilds necessarily. I'm talking about the bread and butter guys. But that's where the ones that are actually probably most afraid right now, because you can't hold up to those kind of standards. You can't sit in the center of the world and do those type of things and deal with those type of contradictions. They are the contradictions, and not necessarily your average rabbi or average Hebrew, because they don't have any power. I'm talking about the contradictions among the A Foxy Foxmans are just plain out there. It's comedy to watch. But anytime you paint yourself as angels, someone's going to find you devils. And all the great, you know, the Muslims had a certain way to treat the Jews. They just wiped them out. Muhammad wiped them out. He wiped whole segments of them out. It's just a fact. It's a historical fact. Europeans have typically treated them nice because of Christianity, basically, because we're so Talmudized. But what would happen was this recurring cycle of negative conditioning, for repressive conditioning, and then they'd get kicked out of the country. You know, if you say you're wonderful, you say you're nice to white rabbits, you better damn well be. Because in the front of your little white rabbit mind is ultimately, something's not right here. You know, if someone represses sex, in the top of your mind, the little white rabbits are going to think about sex. It's just our nature. We naturally condition on a negative basis. We aren't necessarily weird. We're just extremely unique. And our relationship with the Hebrews has always been revolved around that. And, of course, in World War II, this erupted and scared the living bejesus out of whole segments of their elites. And we're going to get into that in the next one. But here we are in another cycle where there's a tremendous post-World War II Anglosphere and Western civilization, negative repressive conditioning toward the Hebrews. You're not allowed to say anything. If you are in any type of research in the Holocaust, you better talk the party line. If you don't, you're going to go to jail. A little bit of repressive conditioning there, don't you think? But you better understand that has never once went well. When you start talking about white rabbits, you do not want to any way, shape, manner, form, negative or repressive condition them, because they will make it into religion like Zion. They will go along with it, but when it boomerangs, it makes history. And like I said, we've seen the Holy Trinity, and I'll go into the next one, but that one was pretty self-explanatory. You can't live up to those standards. Maybe many of you have seen the average Hebrew, and they're okay, no big deal. Once you know the operating tactics of their elites, it's no big deal. The big deal is knowing a little bit about white rabbits. But you cannot live up to those standards. You cannot live up to perfection. You can't live up to being God's chosen rabbit, especially when you're sitting in the middle of the world wailing on people, you know, and hijacking things right and left, but yet saying you don't have power. You're at the forefront of the Federal Reserve Board, but you don't do anything. You say that you don't have Hollywood, but at the same time, you know, you'll have Jews come out and say we own Hollywood. It's just so funny. But that's not what you want to do around white rabbits. And we've seen the Holy Trinity of repressive conditioning out of World War II all started because of World War II and because of the demoralization tactics out of it. And this one, when it comes to the Jews, is just natural. But the only people in the world that have bought into repressive or negative conditioning are white rabbits. And no one in the world cares about the Jews. Yeah, they don't care about it. Chavez doesn't care about them. Arabs don't care. They don't care about them. You know, they wipe them off the face of the planet as soon as they got a chance. They don't care about them. The only one that cares about them are us. But you've seen a massive amount of repressive conditioning, and it is extremely dangerous for everyone but an anti-Semite. After September 11, 2001, one of the wise men had said, pronounced, right when that happened, the next Holocaust had started. I mean, if you go around the world telling the world you're an angel, someone's going to eventually paint you as devils. And doing it around white rabbits is extremely dangerous because we repressive condition. I mean, think about it. Many of you have seen all these immigrants come into these different countries, you know, and then they push that. I remember seeing in France. France has some huge immigrant migrations coming out of Africa trying to get in there, you know. And they push this. Speckly rabbits is wonderful. Speckly multiracial rabbits is so beautiful. Speckly immigrant rabbits are so wonderful to us. They enrich us. Speckly rabbits are so clean and neat. And then all the little white rabbits are looking around, and the first thing they say is, you know, don't touch me fur, you'll make it dirty. Well, that's the way you think. If they're telling you they're neat and clean, you're immediately going to think the direct opposite. That's the way white rabbits operate. And that's why most of you have moved 3 hours away from evil, immigrant rabbits. They're not necessarily neat and clean. And white rabbits are fanatical about their environment. Yeah, you are. You are fanatics about the environment. So it's been funny. You know, all the little white rabbits immediately say, don't touch me fur, you'll make it dirty. Then immediately they throw them in sensitivity training, and then double top secret diversity training, and then they put them on sensitivity probation. And then you get out, you'll shut your mouth, but you'll think, don't touch me fur, you'll make it dirty. And you'll think that over and over again. Yes, you do, because that's the way you operate. But you better understand that it is massive, massive, epic, repressive conditioning. It is dangerous because you're not dealing with a brand. You're not dealing with an R-rated movie. Most of you hopefully don't smoke, but I'm guessing every single one of you tried a cigarette. White rabbits are phenomenal, curious rabbits. They're the most curious rabbits in the world. They will jump on, most of you would jump on a space shuttle to go to Mars to see what's up there. For the same reason your ancestors got on a ship that they thought was going to fall off the planet because the planet was flat. You know, flat Earth. Funny stuff. But you want a rabbit to sail around the world, tell the white rabbits it's flat. Oh, yeah, we'll go there. They will put their head right in any white rabbit, any rabbit hole, period, even if it gets blown off. It's our nature. But it always happens around regressive or repressive or negative conditioning. And we do it naturally, so much so when it starts. When you start it, you can't stop it. But toward the end, you can do some interesting thing. The funny thing about the Hebrews is right out of World War II, and I'm going to go into this when I go into the Nazi rabbits. Right out of World War II, we saw massive repressive conditioning on the Jews' side. I mean, massive propaganda. And you've seen it ever since on World War II and Holocaust and old pity Jews and Jews are perfect. You've seen it all. But among the Arabs, we've seen the direct opposite. Meanwhile, around the Arabs, they were busy translating Mein Kampf. We've seen most of these groups do not negatively condition. They don't repressive condition at all. We're the only rabbits that do it naturally, period. We're the only rabbits that do it, period. Why do we do it? I don't know. Why do your neighbors think they're racist and evil, and why do our ancestors think they were evil sinners? I don't know. We don't know whys. It goes into the deep essence of our race. Most of you consider this some type of self-hatred, and it does come out that way, but it is our propensity to negative or repressive condition. It is our natural tendency to do that. But look out if you have this trend in place against reality. It doesn't matter whether it's sexuality or something else, but someone's done some pretty crafty stuff with this. And of course, we have seen the flip start post September 11, 2001, towards Zionism and everything else. Maybe not fast enough for some of you, but this type of thing usually ends with a bang. And we have, you know, Gollum ready over there in the Middle East, and he's ready to dance in the fire with that ring, like the end of Lord of the Rings. They can't help it. They have some wild different elements, especially in Israel, that they cannot control, and this should be pretty wild. But now we'll move on to talking about the World War II, and then I'll wrap it up. That Hitler is the ultimate evil rabbit. Hitler's a devil rabbit. All Nazis is evil rabbits. All conservatives is Nazi rabbits. All Christian conservatives is Nazi rabbits. Use a Nazi rabbit. You don't like black rabbits, it's because you're an evil Nazi racist rabbit who's going to kill 6 million Jew rabbits. All Nazis are the ultimate picture of evil. All white rabbits are inherently Nazi rabbits. Because all white rabbits is inherently racist rabbits. Nazi rabbits are the ultimate picture of evil. Nazi rabbits are everything Hollywood says they are. Nazi rabbits, Nazi rabbits, Nazi rabbits. All Christians are Nazis. All Christian conservatives are Nazis. They have to be Nazis because they believe the New Testament and that Jesus was a Nazi rabbit. New Testament is anti-Semitic. Hitler used New Testament, therefore it's anti-Semitic. Therefore, Jesus is a Nazi. You could sit here all day and talk about the repressive conditioning and the negative conditioning coming out of World War II and the Nazis. It is, it pretty much speaks for itself. Anyone sane listening to this, it will drive you up the wall. But one thing you better understand, the only people that believe that the Nazis are the ultimate picture of evil are white rabbits. Yeah, white rabbits will believe that because they'll believe anything. Why will they believe that? Well, why your neighbors believe they're racist, and why did your ancestors think they were evil sinners going to burn in hell if they didn't go to communion or a confession? Well, we have the propensity for fantasy. We'll believe that for the same reason we'll go to the moon. It's the fundamental nature of our race. But what's been interesting about this is that how far it's gone out there. You see, you end up in the direct opposite direction of the negative or repressive conditioning regarding the Jews. There's nothing negative about the Jews. Period. You've never heard anything negative about the Hebrews come out of Hollywood, ever. That is extremely dangerous. That is the direct opposite of what you'd want around white rabbits. Because we've already discussed what happens in your little white rabbit brains. You just thank those people that are nice, prim, and proper. It doesn't matter which the white rabbits. On some subconscious level, it's coming to the forefront of their minds. If you make yourself out to be angels, white rabbits are going to ultimately think you're devils. And when it comes to this Nazi stuff, evil, Nazi evil, and then automatically agreeing with Hitler and labeling all white rabbits Nazis, it is comedy. That's not what you want to do. Because you end up in the exact same situation. You see, there is no picture of the ultimate perfection. Human beings aren't perfect. That's why you can't have a perfect Jew. I mean, you know, they don't do anything wrong. But that's not reality to everyone but the white rabbits. When it comes down to the ultimate picture of evil, it's impossible to picture the ultimate evil. It's not possible. They're just human beings. They're not devils. Man, okay, they caused a lot of murder, mayhem, and killed a lot of people. But so did Stalin, so did all these others. If you paint someone as the ultimate picture of evil, you can't live up to that. Yeah, no one listening to this can live up to being a perfect angel, and no one listening to this can live up to being evil. It just doesn't exist in humanity. You can be a mass murderer or something, but you're not going to live up to some ultimate picture of evil. And if you keep saying that, if that's the only image, well, that ends up being a lot of repressive and negative conditioning immediately off the top. And it is the direct opposite of what you want around white rabbits. Because many of you, you know, you have a whole section, a whole subculture of young people that would, even in Hollywood, they would love to put on a swastika and wear it around. Not because they like Hitler or agree with National Socialism. They don't even understand it. It's all from repressive or negative conditioning. It's just whether or not they got the guts to do it and face the heat. And some of them have a glutton for punishment when it comes to facing the heat and wearing swastikas and stuff like that, right? There's a whole culture, you know, Aryan wear. They do brisk business in that stuff. In Germany, they made it illegal. And we can talk about the biggest repression in the history of the white rabbits is what's been done to this segment of revisionist history called the Holocaust revisionism or revisionist history in regard to Holocaust. They're all in jail. Now, is that negative? Is that negative conditioning? Oh, absolutely. Is it intentional? No. Once it gets going, it has a mind of its own. But what we're going to talk about is, again, we're going to talk about and say, is someone trying to flip perception? Does someone understand what's going on out there? And then I'm going to tie it in, because this is a little more mind-boggling. when it comes to World War II, the type of the type of revisionism going on is beyond the scope of imagination of most people. Shortly after World War II, there was a lot of memes planted that Hitler didn't die. And everyone, you know, this is like, seeing Elvis or something. No one took it seriously. But they never left it alone. Someone out there didn't leave it alone. And that's what you do. You plant a meme, you bring it back, you let it die. You, 5 years from now, you bring it back. And there were several other memes. Nazis, UFOs, Nazis, Antarctica. A lot of it was BS. A lot of it was false flags and false covers. But even that's, you know, the only type of bad publicity is no publicity. Right? I'm sure you've heard that expression. Well, yeah. Yeah. That's true. It's a great sales technique. But in 1985, when Ronald Reagan was in office, he was a member of a group called Shark Hunters. And Shark Hunters came out in 1985, and that's one of the official channels for the U-boat. And what they've done is they've documented U-boat history and what happened and what didn't happen, okay? And they documented World War II, what happened, what didn't happen. For instance, they got a DVD. DVD is of Eisenhower's, his actual, it was reduced to DVDs, or put into DVD, of his starvation camps, where he starved, you know, 15-year-old German soldiers thrown in a uniform, and they put him in starvation camps and starved them to death slowly. It's evil stuff. If you see it, it'll make you want to vomit. But they documented stuff like that, but they're not big in revisionism. They don't touch any Holocaust revisionism. Why? Because you can go to jail for that. But what they do is they document what the Germans were and what they weren't. Most of them were just conservative average Joes. And the U-boat submarine Germans were notorious for kicking Nazi party members off their boats, or they'd actually end up in the water. So there was a lot of disagreements with inside Germany, just like it would be Anglosphere. Both sides are on both sides in this equation. But what we've seen, in 1985, Shark Hunters put out the fact that Hitler did not die. Now, of course, I was just young then. I wasn't aware of it then. I wasn't aware of it till years later. But that was the official channel, that he did not die in the bunker. And of course, when it comes down to Hitler, let me tell you a story. When I first learned about World War II history, it was in basically, I think it was like a public school at the time, when I first heard about it. But one thing I do remember about the classroom is one of these African and American kids, little African kid, raised his hand, and he said, he took umbrage to the fact that the Hitler was the ultimate picture of evil. He said that if Hitler would have been that evil, he probably would have won. And the teacher, it was kind of funny, but the teacher, you know, that's a lot of the ways how Africans think. And the teacher queried him further, why would he say that? And he's like, because the people running this country aren't that wonderful. But you see, therein lies the problem. If you paint someone as the ultimate picture of evil, you're going to have a tough time living up to that. Because the ultimate picture of evil probably doesn't exist in humanity. You may have some bad apples, you may have some evil people, but you're going to have a tough time. The only people that are going to prove it, are only going to believe it, are white rabbits. But you see, therein lies the problem. That starts the negative conditioning. That starts the repressive conditioning, because the more they believe it, the more it comes to the forefront of the mind. And, how many of you have seen liberals or something like that talk about the, you know, all these Holocaust deniers in jail? They don't talk about it in public because, you know, they don't want to go to jail. But therein lies the problem. And post-World War II, someone's been a little too intelligent. And so now the official position is that Hitler did not die. Where did this come out at? Well, it came out on the History Channel, I believe, or the Discovery Channel. But this is also, I'm going to read you a piece. And, this is an official piece from Shark Hunters. We've been saying since 1985 and recently backing up with hard evidence and facts. Now a forensic expert has determined that the skull that the Soviets have been touting as Hitler's was that of a young woman in her 20s. Here's a clipping from The Guardian out of England, which our SIG agent Pizarro sent us a short while ago. Now, people are beginning to believe what we said for almost 2.5 decades. Hitler did not commit suicide, did not die in the Führer bunker, did not die in Berlin, and certainly did not die in April 1945. We know where he fled, where he lived, and approximately when he died. Our members are reading all these facts in our monthly magazine. Others get snippets and bits. Here's what The Guardian linked. According to Connecticut archaeologists and bone specialists, and it goes on to say the DNA extracted, and this is The Guardian. This is an official source. So you're now seeing official sources start putting out the meme or start putting out the facts that he didn't die when we think he died. Now, what does this mean? Well, any one of these events that I'm going to show you mean nothing. Any one of these events that I talked about mean nothing, other than someone's trying to flip perception. And when you start talking about Hitler's death, you start talking about World War II and what really happened at the end, there were groups planning the meme right afterwards, if you trace this stuff back. Now, was it believable? No. No. But when it comes down through the Guardian channels, something's coming on, you know, watch this space. And then you have, of course, the massive propaganda that's come out continuously in regarding Nazi weapons post World War II. All kinds of stuff, and most of it is propaganda, propaganda which covers up technology, which in my opinion is far more sophisticated than the Hanabu. The Hanabu UFO stuff is fake. Yeah, it's never been validated or backed up, but there was other stuff far more sophisticated that will prove to be true, and that comes down to Joseph Farrell channels, that bell shaped thing they made to test this next generation physics. Far more sophisticated than the Hanabu, but it was a testing technology. Of course, that's 70 years ago. The Nazis on the moon stuff, that's all propaganda. But that was 70 years ago. 70 years ago, they were testing. You know, if you read The Sorcerer's Stone by Joseph Farrell, you start looking at the laser technology they were testing 5 and 6 decades ago. Where? South America. They had a little state down there. That's the official position, and that's going to be the official position. The whole truth of the matter, I don't know. But you have a whole lot of negative conditioning, and all at once, it's starting to flip. Not flip accidentally or by nature. We're not talking about something like, we're not talking about something like Victorian England, where you have all this hanky-panky coming out. Someone has planted the meme long, long ago, and now it's coming full circle. And then the reason I went into this topic of conversation is I was asked what I thought about Inglourious Basterds. Inglourious Basterds was a movie by Quentin Tarantino lately. And of course, the "what you see is what you get" commentary is the one you get from David Duke. And David Duke did an overview of it, and his statement was this, his last paragraph, I'll read it to you, and this is from DavidDuke.com, and you can look up Inglourious Basterds. And the title is "Jewish Sadistic Hate Film Promoted to the World While True Story of Jewish Revenge Hidden." And he goes on to say the sick Jewish porn film, one that promotes sadism, torture, murder, and bloodlust, is now being promoted and praised by the Jewish influenced media all over the world. The fact that such a film glorifying torture and sadism would be almost universally praised is proof that the power the evil Jewish supremacists have over our media and mainstream political establishment. I will soon publish my own article on the Jewish porn film, as I feel that exposing this sick film can go a long way exposing the evil of those who led us to terrible losses, human life in Iraq and Afghanistan, and who now seek a catastrophic war against Iran. It exposes the evil of the Jewish-dominated Hollywood and media establishment, so on and so forth. And that's what you see is what you get. But David Duke concluded something that my favorite reviewer, there is a reviewer out there that saw it just as me, his name is Trevor Lynch, and he was reviewed it for the Occidental Quarterly. That's the Occidental Quarterly Online, OCCIDENTAL. And it's titled Inglourious Basterds, and it's Trevor Lynch. And instead of me doing a review, I'm going to read you his review, because it's important to understand. Inglourious Basterds is about a team of American terrorists consisting of 7 Jews led by a Gentile, Aldi the Apache Rain, who hails from Tennessee and claims to be part American Indian. The character is clearly based on Tarantino himself, since he too is an Italian name, hails from Tennessee, and claims to be part Cherokee. The mission of the Basterds is to terrify the Nazis by killing them in the most sadistic manner possible and mutilating their corpses. The dead are scalped. The survivors have swastika carved on their forehead. Holocaust narratives are filled with tales of thousands of Jews herded to their doom by a relatively handful of Nazis, Germans, and their collaborators. Although this sheep-like behavior seems rather unlike the hyper-aggressive and unruly Jews of my acquaintance, the most people accept it at face value and then wonder, what was wrong with these people? Why didn't they fight back? Tarantino has asked the same question. When you watch all the different Nazi movies, all the TV movies, it's sad. But isn't it also frustrating? Did everyone walk into a boxcar? Didn't someone do something? And that's, of course, Tarantino has asked the same question. He's quoting Tarantino, not himself. Inglourious Basterds is his answer. During World War II, the Jews needed leadership of someone like Aldo the Apache, the mostly white man, a mostly white man with a bit of Red Savage mixed in, just like people who have churned out 6 million Holocaust flicks need to take direction from Quintino. With Tarantino in charge, the war would have had a very different end, and Inglourious Basterds shows us how. Should Jews be insulted by this premise? Of course they should. But the movie itself is far more insulting still. Indeed, this is probably the most anti-Semitic movie ever released by Hollywood. I agree with that. Tarantino's Jewish characters are one-dimensional, inhuman monsters. The Jewish Basterds are as ugly as Der Sturmer cartoons. They have virtually no lines in the entire movie. All they do is skulk around, waiting for Aldo the Apache's commands to murder and torture Germans. The most prominent of the Basterds is played by Eli Roth, just another degenerate Jewish director of repulsive horror films. Roth plays Bear Jew, who beats Germans to death with a baseball bat. He is the funniest thing in the entire movie with his pouting, prissy mouth, drag queen makeup, and shiny, brilliant coiffure. Roth's large, hairy body, anyone can take steroids, in quotes, looks menacing until one hears his high, hysteria-edged voice. There was laughter in the audience every time this castrated gorilla opened up his mouth on screen. Too shy to realize that he was playing a monstrous buffoon, Roth really got into the role, praising Inglourious Basterds as kosher porn. Is there any other kind? He really gets off on fantasies of killing Nazis. It's almost, and this is, he quotes Roth, it's almost a deep sexual satisfaction of wanting to beat Nazis to death, an orgasmic feeling. My character gets to beat Nazis to death. That's something I could watch all day. My parents are very strong about Holocaust education. They sound like lovely people, and I'm sure they are really proud of what a successful boy Eli turned out to be. Other Jews were equally smitten. Tarantino's producer, Lawrence Bender, told Tarantino, "As your producing partner, I thank you, and as a member of the Jewish tribe, I thank you, motherfucker, because this movie is an effing Jewish wet dream." Harvey and Bob Weinstein, the film's executive producers, also reportedly enjoyed the film's theme of Jewish revenge. Tarantino also reportedly received uniformly positive reactions from his Jewish friends. "The Jewish males I've known since writing this film and telling them about it, they've just been, man, I can't effing wait to see this effing movie." He told me they are telling their dads and they're like, "I want to see that movie." If these Jews have no objection to their tribe being portrayed as one-dimensional, vengeful sadists, who am I to complain? Perhaps the shoe fits. The most prominent Jewish character in the movie is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Shoshana, played by Melanie Laurent, the daughter of a Jewish dairy farmer that got first laugh of the movie. Her family is massacred in 1941 by the SS, and somehow she turns up a few years later with an assumed French identity, running a movie theater in Paris with her Negro lover. When her theater is chosen to premiere a new German movie in the presence of Hitler, Goebbels, Goring, Bormann, and other leading Nazis, she plans to bolt the doors and burn the place down as an act of revenge. Shoshana is a character of reptilian inhumanity. A young German, Frederick Zoller, played by Daniel Brühl, is obviously smitten with her. A film enthusiast, he tries to strike up a conversation about movies. The contrast could not be clearer. He is warm, sincere, and polite. He sees her as a fellow human being and a fellow film enthusiast. She sees him only as a racial enemy. She takes no interest in him until she discovers that he is both a film star and a war hero, which she thinks she can use to her advantage. He does not reveal these things to her initially, for he does not merely wish to impress her, but to befriend her. Her only flash of human emotion comes at the end of a scene in which she meets the SS man, Standartfuhrer Hans Landa. Who's played by Christopher Waltz, who murdered her family, but it just heightens the impression that she is a cold-blooded master of deception and intrigue. Shoshana's inhumanity is heightened by comparison to Uma Thurman's revenge-driven character, The Bride, in Kill Bill movies. The difference is not just a matter of who played the role, although Tarantino decided that as well, but how the actress were directed. Hans Lana claims that he is effective at hunting Jews because he knows how they think. The meaning of this is made clear at the end of the film when he turns out to be a traitor. The Allies do not come off much better than the Jews. Aldo the Apache is only American. He is a loudmouth, sadistic, duplicitous jackass with a hillbilly accent. Brad Pitt plays him for laughs, and he is genuinely funny. There are three Britons, a handsome German Michael Fassbender as a film critic, Lieutenant Archie Hickox, Mike Myers as General Ed Fenech, and The Wreck of Rod Taylor as Winston Churchill. The first two come off as effete wankers, and Churchill might as well be Jabba the Hutt. All of this is a strong contrast to the portrayal of the Germans, even the German traitors. First of all, they are mostly quite good-looking and even sexy. As P.J. O'Rourke said, no one has ever had a fantasy about being tied to the bed and sexually ravished by someone dressed as a liberal. Second, they are dignified, charming, polite, strangers, warm, playful, fun-loving among friends. Even though the Germans are supposed to be bad guys, they are the only people in the film with whom most white people can readily identify themselves. This means that white audiences can feel revulsion at the sadistic Jews who murder them. Hitler, of course, is portrayed as a monster. He first appears wearing a cape, which is appropriate since he is played as nothing more than a comic book villain. Goebbels, though he is portrayed as somewhat arrogant, like a film director perhaps, comes off as warm, sincere, playful, and even a bit lovable. Tarantino has obviously immersed himself in German films of the era, and it is clear that he has some admiration for what Goebbels accomplished. In a scene set in England, it is stated as plain fact that Jews run Hollywood, and Goebbels is given credit for giving them a run for their money. A true star of the film is Christopher Waltz, whose portrayal of Hans Landa is absolutely riveting. He is a magnificent character that Tarantino had to turn him into a traitor in the end, otherwise he would be the true hero of the film as well. The other star is Daniel Brühl, who plays Frederick Zoller, the young war hero who becomes a smitten with Shoshana. His character is most likable and most tragic of the film. Now let's examine the climax of the movie. I have no qualms about giving it away, since I don't want any of you to see it anyway. Shoshana hosts the premiere. Hitler and all the top Nazis come to the theater. She splices her face on the fourth reel of the film. Once the fourth reel is playing, her Negro lover bars the doors of the theater. Suddenly, Shoshana's face appears on the screen. "This is the face of Jewish revenge," she screams, while the Negro sets a building on fire. The kindling he uses are movies printed on highly flammable nitrate film. Subconsciously, this backs up in the viewer's head as Jews use movies and Negroes to create mass death and destruction in this country. Meanwhile, two of the Jewish bastards, including the preposterous Eli Roth, have infiltrated the theater without knowing of Shoshana's plot, run amok with machine guns killing Hitler, Goebbels, and other Nazis. The theater then explodes. Everyone dies, Jews, Germans alike. Gotterdammerung. The climax of Inglourious Basterds is obviously based on Oscar Night Massacre in the neo-Nazi Harold Covington's novel, The Brigade. If you don't believe me, read the novel for yourself. The symbolism and message could not be clearer. Jews use movies and movie theaters as tools to destroy their enemies. And since white people in the audience can most readily identify with the Germans, the message gets through. The Jewish movie business is a tool of hatred and vengeance directed against all white people. Why would Quentin Tarantino make a movie about World War II in which Germans are portrayed as attractive human beings, Americans are portrayed as sadistic buffoons, Englishmen are portrayed as effete wankers, and Jews are portrayed as cold-blooded, inhuman mass murderers? Why would Quentin Tarantino borrow plots from neo-Nazi Harold Covington's Brigade to craft a climax for his movie? Why would he use that climax to expose the true anti-white agenda of Hollywood? Is Quentin Tarantino a Nazi sympathizer? Of course not. Nothing could be further from the truth. Tarantino is simply a nihilist, an unfailing instinct defining and desecrating anything sacred. In Pulp Fiction, his one great movie and most sincere, Tarantino showed a profound grasp of spiritual meaning of the duel to the death over honor, symbolized by the samurai sword. In Kill Bill, he made a giant joke of it. In Inglourious Basterds, Quentin Tarantino has made the truly sacred myth in modern Jew-dominated America, especially modern Hollywood, namely World War II and the Holocaust, and he has desecrated it by inverting all of its core value judgments and reversing its stereotypes. In the process, he exposed the true anti-white agenda of Hollywood. Why? Just because he can. The fact that Quentin Tarantino could desecrate the Holocaust, expose Hollywood's agenda, and sell it back to Hollywood Jews is a testament to his twisted genius and their shallowness and moral imbecility. I wish Inglourious Basterds were a better movie, since I think that many white people will benefit from seeing it. Yes, the explicit message is that it's good for Jews and their hillbilly dupes, sadistically murdered Germans, and any other enemies of the Jews for that matter. But the largely white audience which I saw the film with did not seem terribly comfortable with this message. Yes, they found Brad Pitt funny. He really was funny. But the sadism directed at Germans did not amuse. In the last scene of the film, where Aldo the Apache graphically carves a swastika in the forehead of Hans Landa and pronounces it my masterpiece, pathetically enough, this is probably Tarantino's view of the film. There was no laughter. For the subliminal message was coming through loud and clear. We are all Germans now, and every time we turn our eyes to a movie screen, we are seeing the face of German vengeance, or Jewish vengeance, sorry. I wanted to read that because I was asked to do a review. Well, you can just read the review yourself, but I wanted to do the whole thing for you guys because maybe you don't want to see it, maybe you don't want to hear the review. But it is the first time that I've seen a flip on a World War II movie. And they did it as a spoof. And this writer, this is a clever review, Trevor Lynch. It's a Wide Sky review. He saw what I saw in it, and I was actually shocked to the ground. Because if you go to a theater and you see this around white people or even East Asians, they could not believe it. They did not like it. It is, they look reptilian. The Hebrews look reptilian. It is, it made me think for a second that Tarantino may be a crypto, he may be a crypto-Aryan. You've heard of crypto-Jews. Well, there's all kinds of crypto-Aryans, and there's a handful in Hollywood that are very clever. But I couldn't believe it. The fact that it's coming out now with all the other Nazi stuff, I don't think is coincidental. You see, any one of these things I pointed out to you is coincidental. In any one of these, what I call the holy trinity of repressive conditioning or negative conditioning, a lot of it's flipping at the same time, and it looks any given one of them look coincidental. But someone's trying to drive something home into this end game, and it should be interesting to watch. But Inglourious Basterds is not good for the Jews. I actually was shocked at how far it went. And that's precisely what you do. But it really took me off guard, and I think most of the people in the audience were taken off guard. Many of you have seen the Hebrews running around in Israel and Palestine and just totally wailing on people on camera. They look almost inhuman when they do it. They have no idea how they appear to the rest of the world. And they are oblivious to it. They see it as they are doing nothing wrong, or they're incapable of doing nothing wrong. But you see, if you go around and you paint yourself, or you paint the Nazis as some ultimate vision of evil, they're not going to be able to live up to that. They're just not going to be able to live up to it any more than you can live up to the ultimate picture of righteousness. It doesn't work that way. So when talking about negative conditioning, what you need to understand is this is dangerous stuff. This is not what you'd want to put in place. Newt Gingrich, I remember one time, he the most intelligent thing I ever heard him say is when he was talking to the Hebrews, he said, you know, maybe you should present the German view when it comes to the Holocaust. Oh, they went absolutely nuts. But what they don't understand is you always balance stuff with white rabbits. You don't walk into negative conditioning because you will be in trouble. You try to repress sex, you'll end up with a lot of hanky-panky, and we're not dealing with little trends here. What has shocked me is that someone's taken advantage of it from a very, very early phase. They've planted the memes. They've come back to the memes. They've let it die down for 5 years, then they come back. And now coming into 2012, coming into this high tide, there is a clear attempt to flip perception. And they're doing it across the board. Now, what does this fully mean? I don't know. Obviously, they've done something. You know, there are two sides to the European equation. There's the side of the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, and they're well hated. They're roosted up at the top of Anglosphere. And Anglosphere is 50-50. But they have way too much control in America, obviously. That control is based on money. But that just got hammered. That's been slipping. And there's another side, the more German side. Now, most people assume the German side is nothing but righteous, but the old American view was that neither side was all that wonderful. Obviously, the German side is a little bit better than the other side. Old Fritz, the Prussian monarch, is not going to sell off his Germans for Africans or Mexicans or anything else, and he wouldn't dare try to replace them. But there's some problems in the German side historically, too. America exists as a breakout from the Anglo side. America was a clean break. nearly clean break. It was an 80% break. They came back and took it back in the Civil War, what I call the Second Coming. Second Coming of the Banksters, the full-on Second Coming. And since then, they've had the full-court press on us because they hate us. And I'll go into the next one, why they do hate us so much. But what you need to understand is that I have no idea how much of this is intentional. Clearly, a lot of this stuff of late has been intentional and something's taken advantage of it. But I do know those that think that they've had a read on it the whole time, that certain members are. And I don't really know what to say about it. This particular MP3 is going to go a little long because I've been asked questions about this, and if you guys want to know about negative conditioning, I'll tell you about it. It's not rocket science once you listen to it, once you understand. But it's not easy to explain the breakdown. But someone has had a pretty good handle on our race. And I do know those that think you know, Nazi International is doing it, which did exist. It does exist. Yeah, I mean, it's old news. They had a state in South America, and they disbanded it. Where'd they disband it to? I don't know. I do know those that thought that they had a clean break, like an American Revolution on the German side. Well, obviously, if you can have a clean break on the Anglo side, nearly an American Revolution, well, some group of Nazis could have a total clean break. And with the type of technological sophistication, who knows? They could come back in and buy out the German side and straighten everything out. I don't really know. They've done something. What I do know is that something like Adolf Hitler would not be smart enough to put those type of trends in place. Would not be smart enough to go, you know, understanding your enemy is not that difficult. Not that difficult to understand these elites because they act like wild animals in Anglosphere, especially the Rothschild, especially the Jewish elite section. And their Aryan cousins, which are very, some of them are related to different marriages and whatnot. They're not difficult to understand. They do the same thing over and over again. But understanding yourself is very difficult. And this was way before Foucault made this public. Way before this stuff became public. So I've been asked, you know, what would it take for someone? Well, Hitler couldn't. It wouldn't be Hail Hitler. It would be Hail Zeus. You'd have to have supernatural Aryan to understand that at an early date. When you start talking about old Fritz, the famous Prussian monarch that is so loved, he knew a lot about Aryans. You know, he's not going to sell us out. He's not, even if you're Irish, he's not going to ethyl and cleanse the place. He's not going to do that. They're not about that. They're not perfect, but they're not into that. When you get into the Russian Tsars, they're a little wild. They're a little wild out there. They're German too, but they're not going to wipe out the Slavs or try to replace them with Mongols. It don't work that way. The other side of the equation really hates us, and that accelerated after World War II. And I'll go into that in the next one why they hate us so much. But they're not intelligent enough to take advantage of something like this. In my opinion, taking advantage of the flip is not that difficult. You plant the meme, you come back to the meme, you plant the meme. But actually understanding it from an early date, because this happened right after World War II, they started planning this stuff, is really shocking to someone like me. So in my mind, they have found something. They have done something. What it is, I don't know. I'm all ears. But I'm not by any means saying Hitler or someone Nazi could put this in place. That's not possible. That's not possible. It would be absolutely supernatural to do something like that because it's too cute. Because you're dealing with something that not only understands our enemy, which is not difficult to do. A lot of people understand our enemy all over the world. Even the Chinese and Japanese understand our enemy. They understand the bank, the private central banks, they know all about them. What you're dealing with is someone that has a fundamental understanding of our race. When there's only a handful out there that can even come close, I can point out the trends. But when you start talking about goading this thing along, way before I saw it, way before a lot of other people saw it, you're dealing with ingenious stuff. Ingenious stuff. Incredible that now in 2009 these trends are starting to flip and someone is consciously helping it. Every one of these facts I give you are meaningless by themselves, but taking as a whole, and once you understand how our race mentally operates, and where the creativity comes from, and to do something like this, you'd have to know why. You'd have to know why your neighbors think they're evil racists. You would have to know why our ancestors thought they were sinners going to burn in hell if they didn't go to confession. Those are big whys, because we are very, very unique. No one else on earth negatively conditions like us, and we go for it, and it becomes uncontrollable. In Northern Europe, I overheard a meeting with a rabbi. He was very, very concerned. He said that the Jewish people, the Jewish elites, have created a golem. And I guess that means a monster. That they have put trends in place unknowingly that they can't control. And he was trying to get his Gentiles to understand that the immigration trends are dangerous and all this other kind of stuff. But what he didn't understand was you did the direct opposite of what you'd want to do. If they would have formed Singapore's and Dubai districts and kept us over these large tracts of land and got rid of the, or put the Africans in their own state or sold them out, a lot of Aryans in those type of situations will breathe themselves out of existence. Putting the throttle on immigration and putting this type of negative programming in place is incredibly dangerous. It's kind of shocking that someone's taking advantage of it. Now, if you're awake and you're an old-timer and you've been awake for 30 years, this type of thing will drive a normal white rabbit up the wall. You will go crazy over this type of stuff. It will drive you insane. Especially once you wake up to it. But what they do with it, you know, when you see these elites, and you've seen this your whole entire life. The Germans will be at the meeting. Someone from Anglosphere will be at a meeting. The Russians will be at the meeting. And they'll call each other Nazis, but they'll never call the Germans Nazis. The Russians call us Nazis. We call them Nazis. But they won't call the Germans Nazis. It's comedy. But the only bad publicity is no publicity. They've kept it alive. On some conscious level, someone out there has done it. And someone has done something incredibly, incredibly wild. I don't know what, but I have a feeling we're going to find out. Was it a side that broke out and did something extraordinary, something mind-boggling? But I can tell you this, I'm not in any way, shape, manner, or form saying the Nazis could do it, because they're not that brilliant. They're taking advantage of a natural pattern our enemy has, and they're taking advantage of a natural tendency we have that most other people and most of the listeners have never been privying to hearing. You see it, you think it's self-hatred, and it is. It has that appearance, but it is far different than that. I don't know, some guys said they like to engineer it out of us, but if you do that, you take away our creativity, because we ask these questions. Is life worth living? What is true? You mess with a white rabbit, you mess with those questions. And in the next one, I really didn't know where to put the next wave file I'm going to hook up to this, next MP3 I'm going to put in, we're going to go into that right now, is a short segment I put a long time ago when I started getting asked these questions. I didn't want to go back into Green Goddess type topics, but I got a lot of listeners that are a lot smarter than I knew. You know, you got two kinds, those that wanted this type of stuff. So I figured I'd put this in. But I was asked about these different types of what you refer to as white rabbit what I call white rabbit esotericism or Nazi esotericism is what they call it on Discovery Channel. But when you get into this type of thing, you just scratch a surface on what is out there and what is up there. And I answered the question in the next one in a roundabout way. But I never put it in one of these MP3s because there was no room for it anywhere. I didn't know where to stick it. It was about a book researcher that I had the privy to oversee what happened, in a roundabout way. And it's about a conversation I had between one of the wise men who's at the front of a large corporation. He's not in the thing. It sounds like I say he's a front. He's not a front. He's at the front office of a large corporation. He's not like a CEO, CFO. He's like a board of directors at the time. I guess that's called a front office. The big Cohiba, the top office, whatever. I don't really know corporate speak that well. And this one scientist who was a brilliant PhD, and the wild stuff that they would say about our race. And how I got embarrassed one day. And I also talk about this particular book that was written in the mid-90s and how this guy got totally knocked on his can about who believes this stuff and how wild this stuff gets. But since you guys wanted to hear about it, I thought I'd go, because I can't really do a movie review on Inglourious Basterds and play it fair, because I would do a movie review exactly as he did. But what I think the reviewer doesn't fully understand, in my opinion, is that is that this type of thing right now in our race is exactly what you'd want. It's incredibly dangerous. It's kind of mythical that someone would know us so well, because our enemy does not understand us. You know, these elites, when you talk about negative selling, well, they'll study us, Jew and Gentile alike, to parasite off of us. That's not the same type of studying. Someone out there knows us in a way that is unfathomable to the average listener. That has got me starstruck. Someone knows us, and I cannot believe the Nazis were that intelligent. But clearly, they got a hold of something. They did something. I don't know what. We'll see it soon. That's the interesting thing. They're going to want the whole world to know, and I'm interested in knowing. There are so many crypto-Aryans out there because that's the game. They're not coming out until the end. And we're near the end, so this should be pretty interesting. But if you're saying out there, you get a lot of these old-timers to say, well, you know, this World War II stuff's got to be going somewhere. They got to be going somewhere with it. Then you see it on the History Channel. Then it starts coming down the official channels. Yeah, they're going somewhere with it. And flipping one of these things is not that difficult. You just have to have the presence in the media, and you have to have the type of cooperation. You plant the meme, and you come back to it. You plant the idea, and you come back to it, and then you accelerate it toward the end. That's not difficult. Understanding how our race operates, there's not that many out there that do, because we are the wacky rabbits. You know, Africans will positive condition. They believe they're building pyramids in Detroit. Guess what? White rabbits will too, right? Because if you don't, use a racist rabbit. But that's the last thing in the world you'd want to do post-World War II, unless you're a Nazi. You don't want to do something like that if once you understand how our race operates. And so in the next piece, we're going to go into this piece that I didn't know where else to put it. But 15 is a little bit long, and I apologize. I don't know how else I can cover the topics you guys want to cover without going a little longer on some of these. And either you're going to like this kind of stuff or hate this kind of stuff. But if you're asking for it, I'll do my best to give it to you. And again, I'm by no means saying someone could put these type of trends in place, because that's not possible. There's no one out there that smart, that's human. No white rabbit is that smart. I mean, I guess you could speculate on white rabbit gods, you know, the Dagda or the Zeus, Indra. I don't know. I'm just saying that I know that they're just not that intelligent. That's multi-generational, repressive conditioning trends. You start dealing with stuff that just takes a mind of its own, that happens naturally, but they do happen naturally. And this one got going by our enemies. It's kind of funny. It'll drive you crazy once you're normal and sane, but what you need to understand is the way you take advantage of it is through a consistent message. The consistent message I'm giving you, many people have commented that, well, it seems kind of clever and a little too long. Some of them are very short memes. In your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. It's very simple. Some of them are a little bit longer. One of the things I got excited about when Bob first wrote the mantra is that Bob understands our propensity for negative conditioning, as I say. He understands us. And so it is geared to take advantage of this type of thing. And you will notice if you get on a consistent message, and I'll be redoing the talking points and modernize them a bit, but you'll see things open up to you. And you need to be patient. A lot of people get very upset with these white rabbits, and it's very common for an old-timer. They will drive you up the wall. But all you have to do is be on a consistent message, and they'll come like carrots to your hands. They'll come like you got big carrots in your hands, simply because they respond to this type of message, which is geared around what I call negative conditioning. They're coming out of negative conditioning, and it's at the forefront of their minds. And what you're doing is doing it in an indirect, clever way, over and over again. We're not saying, but one of the reasons I don't say I am a racist, it's a waste of time. They're going to pull back from that. But saying, in your opinion, I'm a racist, you're just saying that because I'm white, anti-racist. If you say it over and over again, it takes advantage of their natural conditioning techniques. It's very white rabbit-ish. So don't get frustrated by them. You know, Nikola Tesla was just one white rabbit, and he did amazing things. He's going to be the giant of our race in the next century. But he's just one white rabbit. We couldn't understand where he's coming from. You know, if you're very racially aware, most of them won't understand where you're coming from. They never will. To change that would be to change the beauty of our people. They're very nice rabbits. They've been taken advantage of. What you're doing is taking advantage of their natural tendencies to straighten them out a little bit, to guide them around. But make no bones about it, watch this space. Like the writer of the book says in the next segment, watch this space. They've done something. They've done something. And don't get me started on Joseph Farrell's book and what happened at Roswell. We don't know anything. We don't know anything, and we are naturally, by nature, blind. We are blind rabbits. But hopefully this segment, you liked it, if this is the type of thing you're into. But I figure it's something, if I'm going to do it, I'll do it right. But there's way more than these going on than the ones I named. But it is a trend, and that's what we watch. We watch trends. And it is clearly someone knows something. Someone's done something. For this to be happening in 2009 and accelerating, and this has been happening little bits a long time. And maybe many of you have noticed the media starting to show more black crime. They're starting to, one of the London papers printed that the Rothschilds financed the slave trade. They're starting to flip. And it's funny to watch this, but your participation is simply a consistent message. That's all it takes. And right now, but it is funny how this stuff goes to extremes that not even the people that put it in place knew they were putting it into place, and they can't control it. The white rabbits are the wacky rabbits, but that's what makes us tick. That's what makes us unique. But to put something like that in place, you would have to be Zeus or something. It ain't possible. I'm guessing it's just a byproduct of us coming out of this dark age, or maybe they got a hold of something. You know, one of the wise men used to say over and over again, Hitler put the voodoo snafu on the Jews. Well, maybe he was right. Someone did something. I don't know. But like it says in the next segment, watch this space. When it comes to our race's imagination, the indigenous white rabbits of Europe have no equal. Every once in a while, you will get a researcher that will come in. This has been very common post-World War II, and they will start doing research on, all kinds of different occult stuff, Nazi occult. Maybe you've seen these books. Let me give you an example of one. In the mid-90s, in the early 90s, actually, someone was going around, it's not a her, it's a him. His name was Jocelyn Godwin. And I don't know if the fellow is Jewish or whatnot, but he's from the United Kingdom, and he taught at Colgate. And he was going around doing research for a book, Arctos, A-R-K-T-O-S, The Polar Myth in Science, Symbolism, and Nazi Survival. That was the title of the book, and he did it in about 1996. The book came out. But, this is not some National Socialist or anyone that has any idea of this stuff. This is someone who taught at Colgate and Colgate University, and he's doing research, maybe some kind of esoteric research. You know, you've got the standard type of Nazi, crazy bad type ADL research, then you have some other research on what is this stuff about. And so when I talked about the Green Goddess and I talked about some different stuff with our race, you get some people that say, well, Horace, you went out there on a limb, and others would say, well, you didn't go far enough. But all I'm doing is sending you down a direction if you're interested in that. What I did notice was that there is a lot of young people, for whatever reason, a little Aryans, interested in that type of stuff. Someone's watching it. I would invite you to go and Google it. Pull up the YouTube stuff. It's there. Maybe the little Nazis from Stormfront. There's millions and millions of hits on this stuff. But I'm trying to send you down a legitimate path of info, or a path of info that'll be probably a little more healthy for you, or a little bit better for our race in the long run. But I went over that, and if it's going to get hits, I can talk about it. I can talk about things that, I take it anywhere I want to take it. That's what this is about. Whatever gets you interested in practical politics or being on a consistent message. But anyways, Back to Mr. Goodwin. Godwin, I guess it's pronounced. I don't know how to really pronounce his first name. It sounds like Jocelyn. It sounds like a woman, but it's not. It's a male, Mr. Godwin. And again, he teaches at Colgate University. He's doing this research, and this is someone that neither sits here nor there. He's not someone with an axe to grind necessarily, but he's doing research. And he gets a book done. But in doing these books, these people all have the same, you know, there's probably a couple dozen of these things out there. They're pretty usually biased against white rabbits, but not necessarily. But all of them have one thing in common. They get themselves way over their head. They get themselves into something they think is on a lunatic fringe when it comes to white rabbits. And what we believe in our penchant for fantasy or whatever. But one thing they do find out that this is not something just believed by little, Stormfront kids. And let me write you, I'll read you the actual preface, because I do have this book. You can get this book if you want it. I don't think it's particular that great, but if you want the book, it goes over some different concepts that I'm not particularly keen on, but the point I'm trying to make is that they start doing research and they get into a lot more than they bargain for. You can buy the book used. I mean, there's several different used booksellers. Amazon's one, that's a famous one, but there's several more. You can Google them. But you can buy all these different books on esoteric Reich and whatever. Everything connects to World War II, of course, for some reason. But what they find out is this stuff was around thousands, a lot longer than any World War II, and it's still ongoing in a lot more, in a lot higher levels than they thought. So let me read you the preface that Mr. Godwin came up with for his book. One might have thought the ideal of the Aryan race died with Hitler in 1945, having contributed to the unforgettable cruelties of the Nazis toward Jews, Slavs, Gypsies, and other non-Aryan individuals. But not only has it survived the fall of the Third Reich, it has continued to inspire a worldwide group of esotericists who combine an engagement in the spiritual path with an attitude to Nazism ranging from compliance to enthusiasm. The reader will find that the people in question are far from being semi-illiterate inhabitants of the lunatic fringe. They're not idiots. They are highly intelligent, cultivated, familiar with literature and techniques of esotericism, yoga, meditation, alchemy, etc. However, they share to a man a certain combination of themes that are avidly cultivated in circles which my academic colleagues would shun like the plague. And he goes on to some different things they believe, you know, whatever, be UFOs, whatever. The reader may agree with me in suspecting that there is something behind all this. Maybe he or she will know what it is. I do not. But I think that it is time to put up a warning sign saying, watch this space. Well, what you get when you get into this stuff, and again, I just barely scratch a surface because I'm not one to... I'm one of these guys that, I'll believe when I see it. The problem is, when you say that, I also understand that we can't see anything. We're blind. Yeah, rabbits are blind. White rabbits are blind. The good news is all rabbits are blind. We don't see each other. We don't see, you don't see, your Walkman right now that this is playing on. You see light reflecting off what you believe to be your Walkman. It's very tough. Tough to get a hold of. We are very, all rabbits are very susceptible to sound and light because we don't see anything. We don't see anything. We are blind. So I gotta balance what I don't see anything, or I haven't seen anything, with the fact that we don't see anything. That's one of the difficult things for people to get. Especially white rabbits or any rabbit, but when you get into this stuff, this esoteric type stuff, one thing that blows these researchers away time and time again, one thing that hit me on the head, is you're not dealing with run of the mill white rabbits in non powerful positions that believe this stuff. They don't come out and talk about it on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, the mainstream German press. They're not going to be on Russian TV, that type of thing. But in very, very powerful positions, you're going to have white rabbits, Aryan rabbits, that have beliefs that are well, let's just say rather exotic. about the origins of our race and about where this stuff is going. And like he says, watch the space. They don't, you know, I'll give you an example without going too far out there. Yours truly was sitting in a room with a, you know, a very respected researcher, a PhD, and one of the wise men. I introduced you to the wise men. And, or it's the Avengers sitting there with these guys, and they're discussing the fact that they think that our race, and I thought this they were kidding, I thought they were cracking a joke in front of young Horace, that they thought our race was in the wrong solar system. Now, what do you do when one of the wise men, who's worth untold amounts of money, very respected person, never in a million years would you suspect this guy's a front man for anything, much less would you suspect this guy believes something like that, and much less a respected scientist in their field, are sitting there talking about something like this. I assumed they were kidding. I assumed that was joking. And so, of course, I'm laughing. I just start chuckling. I said, okay, you know, my first response was, I hope that's true. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, they are looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm going to repeat that. They're looking at Horace like, what are you, some young whippersnapper, are you crazy? I guess maybe I am. Maybe we are in the wrong solar system. I don't know, but that's what Mr. Godwin got himself into. You get into these situations with very respectable people, if you're lucky enough to talk to them about such issue, and they believe such things like this. And watch the space. Where's that going? I mean, they don't obviously believe it for no reason. Is it just our penchant for fantasy? I don't know. I don't know, but you know, you look at them like they're crazy, and they'll look at you if you have the privilege of talking about these things, because this is not something they talk about in normal conversations. But when you're in these type of things, you know, you don't know what to say. You know, I hope we are in the wrong solar system. You know, I hope tomorrow the white Martians show up and say, yeah, we just came back to Mars and we're back here to pick you up. What are you doing here? You're supposed to be over in this other solar system. Let's get you out of here. Well, you know, you'll see some old scientists and some of the wise men out bitching at them saying, you know, you should have been here 100 years ago. What are you doing getting here so late? You know, that's what they expect. They expect this to happen. I don't know. I'm just telling you. I'm giving you an example. But if you look at the people that did this research, unbiased researchers, just average Joe PhDs researching this stuff, they come in and expect to find a bunch of neo-Nazi nutballs, and they find out anything but. It's like the people doing research on the white nationalists. And the different organizations and groups, they walk in expecting to see nutballs, and they don't. They don't really know how to respond to that because the media has set them up for total failure. The media has a lot of people set up when you come to this Nazi esotericism. Let's just label it that. That's what it gets labeled. Aryan esotericism and that stuff like that. You think you're dealing with nutballs, but you're not. You're not. You're not at all. You know, you're talking about pretty respected members. But, you know, I don't know what more to tell you on the issue other than to send you down some different pathways and throw out some names. And you can read it for yourself and form your own opinions. But as far as me going out there, I didn't go out there. I've heard some outrageous stuff, and I hope it's true. I hope white Martians show up one day and say, yeah, we've been out of the solar system for a few hundred thousand light years, and we just came back and figured you were here, and we're going to rescue you. I think that's wonderful. That's fantastic. But if anything, if some young white rabbit needs something like that to motivate him, I don't care, as long as it's positive for our race. I don't care if they like J.R.R. Tolkien. That's wonderful. It's fantastic. Whatever works. Whatever works, but they are out there, and these aren't, it's like Mr. Godwin found out, you're not dealing with idiots. You're not dealing with idiots that believe this stuff. No, you're not. You're not dealing with, they make fun of these little Nazis on YouTube, little neo-Nazis on YouTube. They call them neo-Nazis, putting up these whatever on, you know, these different researchers in the Third Reich and what they were developing. You know, they did develop it, not were developing, what they did develop. Of course, you're dealing with the 1930s. You know, you're 70 years away from that. 75 years later, what do they got now? Because it didn't just end. Yeah, science doesn't just end. It may not look advanced on the outside, but like I've said, all our stuff right in front of your face, whether you look at it or not, when it comes with the military-industrial complex, it is wide sky. You know, I introduce you to those topics. What you see is what you get in wide sky. What you don't see can kill you. When it comes to our military technology, I don't care whether it was in World War II or coming out of there, it's all wide sky. We don't know, and we don't see anything. We are blind to most things, literally blind. In other words, if you look up with your eyes and say the sky is blue, I don't see anything, and then tonight you put on a pair of generation, sixth generation or fifth generation, whatever they got out, night vision goggles, you're going to get your mind blown some nights. What's really up there flying by? I don't know what they are. You know, I don't know what's going on totally. I'm just passing this on. Whatever works for you to motivate you. But, you know, and that is true. You can get a pair of, I don't know whether they're on fourth or fifth or sixth generation, you know, these night vision goggles. They made famous in Silence of the Lambs. That murderer was running around after the agent hunting him down in Silence of the Lambs. He was skinning those girls, and he was in his basement. He had the lights off. He had those night vision goggles on. Well, they have modern versions of that, ones used by military, and there's different generation ones, and they're on a fifth generation, or maybe they're testing sixth generation. I don't know. They're expensive. They're a few grand a piece, but you can see things that you're probably not supposed to see with them. They let you see, I don't know if the term is frequencies or other, in other words, it opens up your vision a little bit better, but we are blind. We are legally blind. If you've had a grandparent or a parent with, different problems with their eyes, different glaucoma, different eye problems, and you know, in certain types of light they can't see. Well, that's because we don't see each other. We see light reflecting off each other. It's very weird once you understand it, but once you understand it, you understand we're easy to fool. Yeah, but the good news is no other rabbits can see either. That's our upside. But when I go into the Green Goddess and went into that STEM stuff, I didn't do it to go out on a limb, believe it or not. I didn't do it to blow you away. I did it because there's a lot of interest in this stuff from a lot of little white rabbits, and I don't mind it because I am very, very used to it from very big, intelligent white rabbits. I just want to send you down a legitimate path. Or a more legitimate path, because I don't know the truth on the issue. I can only send you the direction if there is such a thing. But it isn't uncommon to have a researcher walk in and then think they're going to deal with a bunch of dumb, stupid little white rabbits who believe some fantasy. And not only that, you're dealing with a race that is prone to fantasy, and then they get blown away with who believes this stuff and what they believe. And some of them, even, you know, the Joseph P. Farrells are figuring out why they believe it. You know, that's a white rabbit that's asking the question, what is true here? He's asking our question. And he's got the PhD and the ability to read the ancient languages to figure out what's going on here. Those guys are going down a particular path. They're not necessarily they're anything but Nazi sympathizers or Third Reich sympathizers. That's not the point. But they walk into this stuff, and next thing they know, they're saying something's behind all this. Yes. Yeah, where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, white rabbits are white rabbits, and we white nationalists, everyone on our side, regardless of what your idealism is. I'm not idealistic at all. I just play a simple game. You white rabbit, you white rabbit. I'm trying to teach you how to play it. But you have to understand that we say race is real, but how real is it? Where's this going? You know, we're going to find out. It'll be sooner rather than later. That's what Revelations is about, time of revealing. But that's an overview, and I wanted to touch on that because there's been some flack on it, and then there's others saying, well, he's not telling, you know, you're not telling him enough. I can always send you down a path. That's beyond the spectrum of practical politics, but at the same time, it's within the spectrum of white rabbits. And because of that, I'm going to touch it. I'm going to touch on it, especially if it's going to get that kind of, if it's getting that tight, that those kind of plays on YouTube and those kind of plays on Google, and all the old timers can't understand it because they just want to get on with Roawa or whatever. But at the same time, if there's millions of hits, well, it's getting, it's a legitimate topic, and I'm gonna touch on it. And basically, they'll have some names to look up, and they can go down some paths. You know, the Joseph P. Farrell path. At least he's got legitimate scientific papers and whatnot. You can at least look at the direction it goes. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.